Her mother's days were spent cooking and looking after the children. Kalinga did not see her mother very often while she was training, as she lived away from her family in a special area with the other tribal members being trained. This was the priest's domain and was sacrosanct. Following the ceremony, Kalinga said, she would be given her own place to live, where she would also conduct her healings. Finally being recognized as a healer made Kalinga feel very proud, although she still believed she had much to learn. This would come from experience and also with the ongoing help from the wise woman. I will take the knowledge that I get from healing one person, to help another. When I later connected with my guide M, he told me that Kalinga was in fact living in Central America and not South America, as I had first thought. With my interest whetted, I decided to do some research on volcanic activity in this region and discovered that there had been an explosive eruption in the volcano bordering the Lake Inaranal in Central America around the time of 750s. My research also verified the use of ceremonial masks by jungle tribes, such as Kalinga described, particularly in special rituals such as funerals. While I was not completely sure that the name of the deity I was given in the regression was in fact Bal, could it be possible that he was worshipped in some form by one or more of the tribes in Central America? The question intrigued me, and once again I decided to do a little more research. Bal was the ancient god of rain, thunder, and lightning, whose worship went back as far as 1450 BCE. The observance of Bal extended from the Canaanites to the Phoenicians in the ancient world. Recent studies into the amazing seafaring expeditions of the Phoenicians indicate they could well have visited the Americas as part of their trading voyages. A review of a new book in Nexus magazine by Ruth Parnell 6 months after my regression caught my attention. The Lost Worlds of Ancient America, edited by Frank Joseph, 1 presents overwhelming evidence that the Americas were visited by seafaring cultures going back at least 4,000 years and continuing till not long before Columbus's voyage to the New World. The book goes on to mention that the depiction of corn in some Egyptian artworks suggests a little-known New World link. Bal was also deified in ancient Egypt, where his name was translated as Lord or Owner, and was also a famous deity in Memphis. Traces of cocoa and nicotine have also been found in some Egyptian mummies, leading to further speculation that there was contact between Egypt and the Americas. Cocoa and nicotine were indigenous to the Americas, and, according to the history books, not introduced to Africa until post-Columbian times. Another possibility also considered by many researchers is that Polynesian seafarers visited the Americas in ancient times. They, too, could have brought the worship of foreign gods to those shores from their earlier contacts. However strange it seems on the surface, it remains well within the realms of possibility that the worship of Bal made it to the Americas from another ancient civilization. Perhaps Bal's association with thunder and lightning would have appealed to certain superstitious tribes living in the shadow of active volcanoes. After this research, I realized that my soul's memories of Kalinga's village felt a lot more familiar and comfortable. I was ready to explore the next part of Kalinga's life. 16. Kalinga's life unfolds. I was guided forward in my regression and next connected with Kalinga after she had lived for over 30 summers and was engaged in preparing the mask for her father's funeral ceremony. Kalinga had confused feelings at his passing, sadness mixed with the happy knowledge that he was now joining his ancestors. She described her father as a good man who had helped many people, but his time had come, as it does for us all. When asked whether he was familiar to anyone in my life today, Kalinga identified him as the spirit of my close friend Roger, who is also part of my soul family. Kalinga's younger brother Lim, as the eldest son in the family, took over the role of chief of the village with the blessing of the people, and she was pleased for him. At this stage of Kalinga's life, she was working in association with mainly the priest and had little to do with her brother in his new role. Kalinga identified Lim as being my son Matthew in this lifetime. Since she started working as a healer, Kalinga said, she had learned much and helped many people. While she had not been able to heal everyone, she had the confidence of the people and maintained, It is important they believe. The village where she lived was, for her times, of medium size, which she described as perhaps housing several hundred people. In the 7 years since she had graduated, word of Kalinga's healing abilities had spread and she occasionally traveled away from her village for several days at a time, helping people in neighboring areas. While she was unable to marry and bear children because of the vows she had taken for her healing work, Kalinga assisted in the birthing of children, as well as their postnatal care. She was also now a teacher and trained several young girls who worked and traveled with her. She stressed the importance of teaching. If something happens to me, there must be others to take my place. Her relationship with the priest had changed, as now she was essentially a healer and did not participate in religious ceremonies as she had during her training. However, she retained her association with the funeral rites and found great satisfaction from painting the death masks. Masks are a very important part of our life, not just for funerals, she said. They help us honor the gods, but also importantly they enable us to say on our mask what is in our heart. The masks are only used in ceremony, telling others who we are and sometimes letting us know who we are ourselves as well. Kalinga liked to carefully focus her energies, and spoke of completing her father's mask before returning to her healing work. She preferred to focus on one thing at a time so that she could do it perfectly, unlike those people who jump from one task to another. She described the location of her village as being near a mountain, which sometimes brought forth smoke and at other times fire. This usually indicated that the gods were angry. Apparently, there had been a lot of smoke recently and there was talk that the mountain might soon produce fire, which hadn't happened for many years. The people felt that the gods were displeased with them but did not know why, and the chiefs of the surrounding villages had no answers. In the past when the mountain produced fire, it was decided the people were not living the way the gods had intended and changes were made. This sometimes involved recognizing people who had committed harmful acts and displeased the gods. The evil ones were described as having very dark hearts, and Kalinga could see the colors surrounding their hearts that identified them. Sometimes they could be helped, but not on every occasion, which meant they had to be sent away. If someone was very evil, he could be put to death. The final decision was made by the chief, who would consult the priest and sometimes come to Kalinga and ask her whether the person could be helped. This was a big responsibility for Kalinga but one she accepted as her duty. When asked whether people feared her because of this responsibility, she replied, "No, because I speak the truth." Neither did they fear the chief, because the people respected him. She said it was hard for her brother Lim, as he had taken on the mantle of chief from their father and then had to earn the villagers' ongoing respect. A big challenge for Lim was that many people did not like one of his wives, a very selfish, greedy woman. His other two wives had given him children, but the unpopular wife did not want children and had somehow discovered how to avoid becoming pregnant. Kalinga said that although she could create potions to help prevent pregnancy, she had not given any of these to her brother's wife. Tribal laws decreed that if preventing pregnancy went against the wishes of the chief, the woman concerned could be regarded as a troublemaker. Kalinga's father had wanted her brother's wives to produce more grandchildren for him, but now that he was dead, it would be up to the new chief, in this instance the woman's husband, to make the decision. Lim would take advice from the priest, and it was hoped that the wife could be helped and persuaded to change her ways. An important aspect of life in Kalinga's village was the pursuit of truth and harmony. Life was well ordered in this balanced society, with men and women enjoying equality in many areas. She described how important a peaceful existence was to the villagers, so much so that wrongdoers were sent away if they could not be helped. It was believed that if the people were at peace, then the gods would be at peace with them. The villagers worked hard and enjoyed a simple life in these idyllic surroundings. At that moment the mountain rumbled and Kalinga once again wondered why the gods were angry. Was there a troublemaker in their village, perhaps her brother's wife, who had upset the gods, or was the problem in one of the surrounding villages? Whatever the reason, Kalinga was frightened of the fire that might engulf them all. She knew her brother's first big test as the new chief would be to appease the gods and so earn the respect of his people. 17. The Wise Woman. Several months later, listening to the recording of my regression, I became enthralled with the story of Kalinga, and on several occasions had to consciously pull myself back to the present day. It is a strange experience to hear yourself describing in such detail a life lived nearly 13 centuries ago. However, the more I listened to Kalinga tell her story, the prouder I became of leading such a life completely dedicated to the welfare of others. But there was still more to come. In my next connection with Kalinga, she described herself as being much older and had now assumed the mantle of the wise woman. She looked back on her years of experience and teaching, describing it as a good life. The energy level coming from this older, wiser woman was much quieter and softer than it had been in previous connections, and she described herself as being fairly reclusive at this stage of her life. Kalinga was reticent to talk much about herself. It was obvious to me that the wise woman had no need to extol her own virtues, although she did mention the extensive knowledge she had accumulated over this lifetime. While she also admitted that her life was sometimes lonely, Kalinga revealed she had many dreams in which she connected with her ancestors, so she was able to find comfort in their presence and their wisdom. When asked, Kalinga recalled the earlier time of the volcano eruption, and said her brother earned the respect of his village when he helped his people. Although many died in other villages, Kalinga said her village was spared because the gods protected them. So her brother was seen as passing the test of the gods and revered by all the tribe. Perhaps his situation was improved when his troublesome third wife died. When asked whether this was from natural causes, Kalinga replied simply, "So it is believed." Looking back on her life's work as a healer, Kalinga was pleased she had been able to help many people, although she said her abilities were not unique, nor was she special. She was one of several villagers who worked in supporting others. Kalinga described her life as being very happy and satisfying because she was able to give without the need to take from others. As a vital part of her healing work, Kalinga enjoyed a strong connection with nature, plants, and animals, which she described as being very special to her. I was shown an image of her sitting quietly on her own, high on a hilltop, watching the sun setting in a crimson blaze, spreading its magnificence across the water. In a state of meditation and prayer, she was connecting with the power of the gods of nature. As Kalinga was taken forward in her life, she quietly revealed that she had now lived for more than 50 summers, and her voice grew tired as her energy became weaker. The average lifetime in her village was around 40 years, with some living to 45, and Kalinga said that she was now feeling very old. Contact with Kalinga was advanced to the time just before leaving her body. She was resigned to her fate and said she was ready to go now, having no further need of her old body. Kalinga said her head had been hurting for some time and she was not sure why. She was puzzled by this, saying she had tried several mixtures, but none had worked. One of her former students was making her death mask, but she was not allowed to see it, because it was as others see me. She added that it was also a symbol of how the ancestors regarded her. Thinking about her life as she lay quietly preparing for death, Kalinga felt a wave of sadness drift over her. She realized that while she was able to open her arms to many people to help them in their healing, she had never fully opened her heart to anyone. She had never given herself completely to another. As her life force started to ebb, Kalinga accepted that while she had been content in her work, this was the one thing that was missing from her lifetime. When the breath left her pain-racked body for the last time, Kalinga's spirit floated free, looking down on the priest and the young women who were preparing for her funeral. Her voice took on a new energy as she described seeing her death mask for the first time. She was delighted at her mask, confirming for her that the people of her village loved her. She knew then that her life's work had been successful and that the gods were happy with her. Her brother Lim, the chief of the village, now an old man, stood next to the body as they conducted the funeral ceremony, and while there was sadness in his heart, he knew that it was her time to go. Kalinga, with the wisdom of the free spirit, realized that he, too, would be reaching his time soon. Kalinga said a little regretfully that she would have liked to have had children to say goodbye to, but she knew her family were those people that she had been able to help through her healing work. She could feel the love of the people for her. There were no tears at her funeral because everyone knew it was her time. In her village there was an understanding that death was part of life, and not to be feared. Before crossing back into the afterlife, Kalinga's spirit, now free from the restrictions of her physical body, looked back on her life in that simple jungle village. She said the major lesson she had chosen to learn was the power of giving, and also learning to receive love as opposed to material possessions. She had no regrets, although there were some people she would have liked to help a lot more, but it was not to be. Her other lesson was to learn to be alone, without the support of a marriage partner and children. Her lack of physical comforts was compensated for the by her spiritual contacts. Kalinga was now content to wait for the gods to deliver their verdict when she returned to the world of her ancestors. 18. Kalinga returns to the heaven world. Kalinga's spirit floated gently back across the divide into the world of spirit, where she was met by her father. She knew it was her father, but he looked different from the way she remembered him from his life as the village chieftain. She described him as emanating a male energy, but he now had very pale skin and a beard. A little bewildered, she said, "It is my father, but it's not my father, yet I know it is him." Her father's spirit explained that she was seeing him in the image of how he would look in his next life. He was showing her that we do not stay the same. He said he could portray himself in whatever way he chose and he wished to take on the appearance of his next life as part of his preparation for it. He wanted to experience the feeling of being that person before he returned to Earth. He also told Kalinga that she would not be sharing the next lifetime with him. Kalinga's father spoke of the preparation for this new life as part of the ongoing nature of the life cycle. He reminded her that each life is but one of many. He confirmed that his guides were helping him in this preparation and also made reference to the ancestors. He was going to be an important man in his next life and was receiving special training in the afterlife for this role. He told Kalinga that he'd had numerous lives in which his decisions affected the lives of many people, and it would be the same in his next incarnation. His destiny was to be an important figure on Earth. He was also able to change his appearance to show her an image of the way he had looked in his previous life. When Kalinga asked about other lives they had shared, her father told her they were together in Roman times as brothers in arms and had many adventures. She was shown an image of them traveling on a road together, both wearing leather helmets and red capes over tunics. The end of life is to be like God, and the soul following God will be like him. Socrates, 469-399 BCE. Her father wanted to welcome Kalinga back to the spirit world as a member of her soul family but also to honor their connection in the previous life. Kalinga described how good it felt to be home again and how she was able to enjoy a sense of embracing her father, even though they had no physical bodies. She was able to have an awareness of her own image, which she said no longer looked old, but instead soft. Kalinga talked proudly about the importance of family relationships for the people in her village. She was happy to have helped them as their healer and wise woman, but now that she was back in the world of spirit, Kalinga was a little shocked to realize how simple the remedies were that she prescribed. Later, Kalinga was able to return to Earth in spirit and discovered how much of her healing was done with heart energy. This was achieved not only through the power of intention, but also by putting a lot of love into her healing methods. Kalinga now also realized that the spiritual messages she received as the wise woman were from the spirits of her ancestors and not from the gods. "There are no gods the way we saw them," she said. "We thought we were appeasing the gods. But we were really communicating with the spirits of our ancestors who were helping us." She added that the wisdom passed on from the spirits of the ancestors to guide people on Earth has been going on for many, many lifetimes. Kalinga was also reunited with other members of her soul family, and we discovered that one of her sisters, whom she was very close to, was known to me as Judy. Kalinga's sister died several years before her, and Kalinga was able to put all her love into her sister's death mask. There were very strong family ties between them, and Kalinga loved her sister and her sister's children deeply. In particular, Kalinga enjoyed a close bond with one of her nieces, whom she had trained as a healer and whose spirit has incarnated as my daughter Rebecca. My guide Emulator confirmed that Rebecca and I have experienced several lifetimes together, as my mother in one life and as my son in another. We all tend to reincarnate in soul groups in a variety of relationships to help one another learn and grow spiritually, so this was not surprising to me. However, I'm not sure how my daughter will take the news of having played mother to me in the past. The deep but unexplainable familiarity we have with certain people in our current life can often be traced to past life connections. It is comforting to know that when someone very close to us passes over, it is never the end, just a new beginning. We will see them again and very possibly enjoy many earthly experiences in a future incarnation. 19. Soul energy guidance. When we reincarnate, we always leave a certain portion of our soul energy in the afterlife that is able to work independently to the soul attached to our body. This is sometimes referred to as our higher self, or oversoul, and is able to access information from other incarnations as well as oversee our current life. More details on this are given in Chapter 38. In the regression, Colleen was able to communicate directly with my soul energy, seeking to receive details of my past lives. My past life regression with Colleen took place just before Christmas, and I decided to take a break for the holidays and not listen to the recording of the session until after the festive season. So it wasn't until several weeks later that I played the recording for the first time. It was the strangest feeling hearing another part of me speaking about my soul's progress through several lifetimes in a detached, straightforward, and honest way. It almost felt as if I were not in the room at the time. My soul energy confirmed that I'd had many other lives as a healer, with a very significant one as a priest in ancient Egypt. This lifetime was spent in the Temple of Isis, but it was a more ceremonial role rather than any involving direct healing practices. Even though I was not asked to go deeper into this lifetime during the session, I readily accepted this information, as I have always been fascinated by the history and culture of ancient Egypt. I have visited many ancient sites there some more than once and also collected many Egyptian artifacts and books, including statues and carved images of the gods. And of course my romantic adventures with Carol took place in the land of the pharaohs. When asked what I needed to learn from these past life experiences, my soul energy said that I basically needed to know I have led lives where I was able to help people. My most recent past life, when I was killed in the Great War, was the culmination of many lives as a soldier. It took numerous lifetimes to achieve this completion. In my current life I need to understand that even though I've been destructive in the past, I have also helped people, and it is very important to achieve a balance in our life cycles. It also bore out John Dingwall's words, that spiritual growth is achieved through many lifetimes, and we often take our karma from one life to the next to resolve major issues. We can develop wonderful qualities in one lifetime, such as displayed by Kalinga, but still have other unresolved blockages that need to be addressed in another. As I listened to the recording, I was encouraged to hear that I can help people in this lifetime, though in a way different from Kalinga's. The message was not to feel guilty about being a soldier, and now that one side of my progression had been completed in Kalinga's life as a physical healer, I needed to bring a different aspect into focus. There are many forms of healing, and one does not necessarily need to practice as a doctor, a counselor, or even a spiritual healer to accomplish this. My soul energy identified my accumulated knowledge, the ability to communicate, and the use of spiritual and intuitive abilities as the keys to my healing activities in this life. This has been evidenced by my intuitive readings as well as my books. My soul energy also confirmed that I have the ability to bring in the combined knowledge and experience of these two previous lifetimes as Kalinga and the Egyptian priest. I listened to my soul speak to me directly and dispassionately, beyond the normal emotions I am caught up in each day. As I thought about this later, it occurred to me that my regression to my life as Kalinga the Healer was, in fact, drawn from the memories stored in my subconscious mind. I had a strong sense that further material would be available to me through deep meditation now that the door had been opened to my distant past. Our soul energy is able to access any of our past lives when it decides regression to a particular incarnation is appropriate for our growth. It doesn't matter whether we are here on Earth or back in the afterlife, accessing the Akashic records. I realized how valuable it was to explore my past life recall in detail, to glean the many insights it offered to light the way in this lifetime. Looking back objectively on Kalinga's life, I could see that she achieved a lot of positive things. She was a selfless and effective healer who gave up any thoughts of marriage and children, no matter how challenging that was, to dedicate her life to the welfare of the community. It demonstrates that we do not always need earthly trappings to lead a happy and successful life. After getting to know and understand Kalinga, I believe that my soul growth from that lifetime was enormous. 20. The Wisdom of M. When I listened to the recording of my past life regression, much of the information came as a complete surprise, although I was able to recall sketchy aspects of my life as Kalinga when I came out of the hypnotic state. But the biggest shock came when I heard Colleen ask me to connect with my guide and then requested details about him. I had never talked to her about my guide M, and she had not read Afterlife, so this question was unexpected. However, I realized there had to be a reason for the query, otherwise my guide M would not have permitted the contact. M only provides guidance for my writing and not my personal life, and has always been reticent about coming forward. He prefers to remain in the background, inspiring me with his gentle, loving presence. I am very grateful for M's presence, as he is with me every step of the way, feeding me thoughts, helping form ideas, and confirming or rejecting information that I receive from my many sources. I treasure that part of M that inspires my writing. During the regression, my soul energy immediately tuned in that it was indeed M whom Colleen was asking about, and not another guide. M allowed me to tell her that he has traveled far as a soul and has had many significant earthly lives. I was honored to learn that I had been with him in a past life in England, around the turbulent time of the Reformation. King Henry VIII was on the throne and in addition to collecting six wives, he was responsible for the creation of the Church of England. This entailed the destruction and looting of many Catholic churches and also mass killings under the direction of Thomas Cromwell. The turmoil then continued during the reign of his daughter Queen Elizabeth I. As I listened back to this information from M, I was delighted, as I had no conscious memory of this contact. The remarkable thing was that during my Christmas holiday break I had been focusing a lot of my thoughts and interest on Tudor times, which turned out to be the very period in history when we were together on Earth. M revealed that he had been a very high-ranking authority figure in those times, and I was one of his assistants. It was a turbulent era when there was a great power struggle for the hearts and minds of the people as the Roman Catholic Church and the monarchy vied for control. At such dark and troubled times there are always great souls who hold the light of reason, justice, and compassion while still remaining solid. I believe M was such a person. M has been a master guide for a long time. As a master guide, he is easily able to split his spiritual energy to be in various places at once, and chooses to incarnate when it is necessary. While he may agree to play an important role in history, it would not be for self-aggrandizement. Obviously, deciding he didn't want to become the focus of attention in the regression, M firmly moved the direction of the questions away from him and back to me. I later communicated directly with M and got his permission to include this information. He would not tell me, even off the record, which important figure he was in that lifetime, nor indeed who I was. He would confirm only that it was during the reign of Queen Elizabeth I. Pushing my luck, I cheekily asked him whether he was, in fact, the swashbuckling Sir Francis Drake, which he laughingly denied. 21. The connections continue. The surprise of connecting with them during the regression was followed by another revelation that opened my heart and answered many questions for me about my current life.